Fey.
Just one day after the U.S. VP Mike Pence said that it was an honor for him to be in Israel's capital, Jerusalem, Mount Gretz, he said the timing of a U.S. Middle East so-called peace initiative depended on the return of Palestinians to negotiations. And this debate will ask, how can the U.S. ask for the Palestinians to participate in a peace process which was dead even before the U.S. recognition of Jerusalem, Mount Gretz, as Israel's capital? Furthermore, as Hamas political chief warned, Israel and the U.S. are preparing regional states to come to terms with the Israeli occupation.
Palestinian factions, including Hamas and Fatah, are sounding the alarm over the United States' recent anti-Palestine policies and rhetoric. On Tuesday, Hamas political chief Ismail Haniyeh warned that Israel and the U.S. are preparing the regional states to come to terms with the Israeli occupation. He said there must never be any recognition of the Zionist entity, stressing that Palestinians are aware of the U.S. and Israeli threats.
The American decision on Al-Quds and Pence's speech before the Knesset proved that the U.S. has a strategic alliance with the Zionist entity. It comes in the context of targeting the Palestinian cause and the principles of the Palestinian cause, and the accelerated decisions by Israel represent a historic threat to the Palestinian right and to the Palestinian cause.
Meanwhile, Palestinians all over the West Bank quit their posts on Tuesday over U.S. Vice President Mike Pence's visit to the old city of Jerusalem, Al-Quds. The entire public and private sector, excluding those working in the health sector, took part in the industrial action. Stores, banks, and educational institutes were shut down, and public transportation services were disrupted. Palestinian officials at Fatah Movement, who called for the strike, said the walkout was an initial response to Mike Pence's anti-Palestine rhetoric.
This general strike was the first against the visit of Pence to the region and to Al-Quds in particular, and it's in rejection of his racist speech before the Knesset. Palestinian factions are united and will call for more actions against Trump's policies and those of the Israeli regime.
Meanwhile, Palestinians took to the streets of the West Bank on the final day of Pence's visit to the area. Here in Ramallah, hundreds of people from all walks of life participated in the demonstration.
We are here to say no to Pence and any other U.S. official. None of them are welcome. He's visiting Al-Quds, a Palestinian holy city, not Israeli. Our message to both the U.S. and Israel is that nothing will end our resistance.
Palestinians believe U.S. unwavering and inexorable support for Israel is expected to make the regime even more emboldened to accelerate its violence against the people of Palestine. Palestinians want to reiterate through this general strike across the occupied West Bank that Jerusalem Al-Quds will remain their eternal capital and that they opposed the visit of the U.S. vice president to their holy city, while their leadership has sought not to engage with U.S. officials following Trump's move. Muna Kandil for Press TV, occupied Ramallah.
Our guest joining us for this edition of The Debate from the Answer Coalition, Richard Becker, joins us from San Francisco. And we have historian and political commentator Jeffrey Alderman, who joins us from London. I'd like to welcome you both. And Richard Becker, I'll start with you, the U.S. VP in Israel. First words practically out of his mouth, I have arrived at the capital of Israel, Jerusalem, Al-Quds, followed by the U.S. will move its embassy to Al-Quds by the year 2019.
Yeah, and this is a great insult to the Palestinian people. And it shows once again that the idea that the United States is or has been any kind of an honest broker in the peace negotiations, so-called peace process, is just complete fiction. And what Pence is doing, what Trump is doing, is really, they're saying, well, we're taking the issue of Jerusalem off the table. I mean, you've got to be kidding. You have to be a fool to accept that argument. What they're doing is making it even more a focal point of struggle, because as your the person that you quoted from Ramallah said, the Palestinians are not going to give up. They don't accept the idea that because Washington, because Trump or a Christian Zionist like Pence declare that this is the Jerusalem, Al-Quds is the capital, the eternal capital of the state of Israel, that the Palestinians will possibly accept that. They won't.
Jeffrey Alderman, the argument laid out there by Richard Becker is pointing towards the U.S. not being an honest broker by this recognition of Jerusalem Al-Quds from not only, obviously, Donald Trump and now the VP. So what do you think about the U.S.'s position there?
Well, I think, firstly, we have to recognize that this entire Jerusalem initiative was driven primarily, though not only, by President Trump and Vice President Pence's domestic policy. It's an initiative aimed at a domestic, I mean an internal American market. Secondly, I have to say that in as much as there ever was in the recent past,
wait a minute,
a viable
I'm sorry to jump in.
Peace
Can you
process,
please tell us what you mean by that, that it's aimed at the internal market in the US?
Yes, of course. The Christian evangelical lobby in the United States of America was pivotally important in handing the White House to Donald Trump and Mike Pence. And looking forward, as I think Trump and Pence are, to a second term in office, to say nothing of the midterms next year, that lobby, that caucus, that interest has to be satisfied. That's what I meant.
So the Christian evangelical, I would think, Richard Becker, would be another term for AIPAC, but that's not the case. Because do you agree with the Christian evangelicals being the ones that Trump and VP Pence are catering to when they make this announcement of Jerusalem Al-Quds being the Israel's capital?
Well, I think more than any other group, if we're talking about domestic politics in the United States, it would be that constituency. It's very interesting to note that the Christian Zionist idea and support for the State of Israel is that Israel had to come back into being as a state in order for then there to be the end of the world, the Battle of Armageddon and the end of the world. And while they pretend to support the State of Israel, and they do support the State of Israel, I should say, but they're anti-Semitic as well. Because their argument is, or their view is that after this happens, after Armageddon and the so-called rapture, then everyone who hasn't accepted their view, in other words, doesn't share the Christian evangelical view, will be sent to hell. And that includes Jews and Muslims and Christians who don't accept their viewpoint. So it's highly cynical. It's the greatest form of cynicism that the Israeli leadership entertains these people, brings their leaders, their pastors to five-star hotels, fates them, and gives them gifts and praises them, knowing full well that, in fact, this is a profoundly anti-Semitic group. So this declaration that the United States now recognizes Jerusalem as the capital of the State of Israel has nothing to do with a positive position toward Jewish people.
Let's look at this a statement made by Israel, if we can, Jeffrey Alderman. Israel saying the sooner the Palestinians accept the truth about Jerusalem, the sooner the two sides can reach an agreement that will create a better future for both our peoples. Does this mean that if Palestinians don't accept this Jerusalem Al-Quds recognition, that there will be no talks?
Yes, I think it does. I think we have to be brutally frank about this. That's exactly what I think it means.
Well, then let's move on to some of the other points of contention here that the PA is looking at, Richard Becker, that they don't want to come to the talks. The recent move of Donald Trump to withhold aid payments to the Palestinian Authority, that was looked as blackmail by many, including the PA office. Actually, the spokesperson saying that Jerusalem is not for sale, neither for gold nor for silver. Was that a move by the U.S. to get the PA to come to the negotiating table?
No, of course not. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's the I remember back in 2008 when there were negotiations going on, an advisor to the PLO delegation, to the Palestinian Authority delegation, made note of this. He said, it's like we're arguing over a pizza, and one side is eating the pizza while the negotiation over how to divide it is going on. And of course, that's what's been going on now ever since 1967 in regard to the West Bank and East Jerusalem, and it was in Gaza too until it failed there. But the settlement process, the apartheid settlement process, and I want to stress that, is that there's an apartheid system that only Israelis can live inside those settlements, those modern new settlements that built. There's separate roads for them. There's separate license plates for Palestinians and Israeli settlers in the West Bank. But that process of devouring the land, of taking more and more and more of the land and saying, well, we want peace, but we can't find a partner for peace. I mean, that's that too of hypocrisy and cynicism on the part of the Israeli leadership and on the part of the U.S. leadership, which has really acted as the armor, the funder, and the diplomatic protector of Israel for many, many decades now.
Well, there's this peace plan, Jeffrey Alderman, this so-called peace plan, the details of which have not been made public. Of course, sources seem to suggest that it's not going to include recognizing East Jerusalem al-Quds as the capital of the Palestinian state, which we just covered, nor any settlement of the issue of the Palestinian refugees' right of return. So what reason would the PA have to come and be involved in a peace process where the details, were these details to be true, would prevent them from even trying to compromise on anything?
Well, I've also seen these leaks of what the Trump peace plan is supposed to contain. And if those leaks are correct, I can't see that there would be any value from the Palestinian Arab point of view in coming to the table, unless there were tremendous pressure by, for example, Saudi Arabia. I suppose we should admit that that has a faint chance of success, not much, but some.
Well, I'm gathering from you, Jeffrey Alderman, I'm sorry, it's my interpretation, that we're looking at the way that I'm gathering from you, that we're looking at the U.S. and Israel pretty much dictating their terms and saying, this is what it's going to be. Take it or leave it.
Yeah. If I can put it this way, the train has left the station. And if the Israeli and American viewpoints are that the Palestinians have left it too late to get on that train, but they might be able to run after it and get a seat if they act very quickly. If not, the train will go on as a juggernaut and the Palestinians will be left high and dry.
Richard Brecker, your reaction?
Well, I think that the peace plan is completely anathema to the Palestinians and has really nothing in it for them. It's much worse than even what was envisioned back in Oslo. And Oslo was a disaster for the Palestinians because it seemed to wish to point to the creation of a Palestinian state, albeit a very small, disarmed, and weak state. But we don't even say anything like that today. But I think that the other side of the coin is that the Palestinians are not about to give up and go away. That's been the desire. That's been the whole policy, the entire policy, with all of its different facets, Israel's policy toward the Palestinians, through the checkpoints, the separate roads, the discrimination that exists, the imprisonment, the shootings, the house break-ins, all of this. The point of that is to get the Palestinian population to give up and to leave. The Palestinian population has not. Today, in what was the British Mandate of Palestine, Gaza, 1948 Israel, and the West Bank and Golan Heights, together, the populations are roughly similar in size. That doesn't determine everything, but it's a very important fact that the demographic fact that the Palestinian population is increasing faster than the Israeli population. So where is this all going? The idea that it can just be force the Palestinians to accept anything or force them to leave, that's false.
Jeffrey Alderman, when you say that that's how it is, that if the Americans, well, and the Israelis are having this regional peace deal and they don't really care if the Palestinians get on board or not, there's another danger here that if you squeeze the Palestinians, that may rupture. We haven't seen a third intifada as of yet. We're seeing days of rage every Friday. We saw the protests. They were pretty harsh in terms of the number of arrests and injuries and some that were killed. But doesn't that also risk violence when you squeeze the Palestinians to this point?
There is a risk. I admit that. But after President Trump made his astonishing Jerusalem announcement, we were told that there would be a Palestinian uprising, that the Muslim world would rise up. Has any of that happened? And that's what the Israelis are saying. None of this has happened. They're saying the bluff has been called.
Do you agree with that, Richard Becker? At this point, we have seen the rebellion that took place, also the resistance, but the rebellion that took place after the announcement of Jerusalem al-Quds, and even to this day, we're still seeing demonstrations, every Friday especially. Do you think that this risks a third intifada to come out in full force?
Well, it's very hard to say what brings about a full-fledged intifada, but I would point out that today there's a complete general strike going on in the West Bank by the Palestinians in protest of the Trump visit and of the Jerusalem al-Quds announcement. So, and there's been a lot of struggle going on in the streets, opposing the army, confronting the army in the occupied West Bank and in occupied Gaza. And Gaza is still really occupied. We should be clear about that. It's a big open-air prison surrounded by Israeli military force on both the sea and land sides. So I don't think we should write off the Palestinian resistance, and I don't think the Israelis are really writing it off yet either. They're hoping that there will not be a new full-fledged intifada. The governments of some of the surrounding states, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Egypt in particular, most importantly, are really going along with the U.S.-Israeli program, as was pointed out earlier.
The PA has not been sitting silent, Jeffrey Alderman. Mahmoud Abbas was in the EU recently and asked the EU for the recognition of Palestine. At this point, getting the EU backing. And I'm going to ask your reaction to what the EU foreign policy chief, Federica Mogherini, said. She said, "I want to reassure President Abbas of the firm commitment of the European Union to the two-state solution with Jerusalem as the shared capital of the two states." Do you think that the EU and its foreign policy chief have enough pull to be able to back Abbas and stand up to the word, in this case, of Federica Mogherini, and promise that she has given?
No, sir. I do not think the EU has any role to play. I do not think the USA and Israel will permit it to play any role. I must say that Mahmoud Abbas's long rant against Jews and the Jewish world conspiracy after the Trump announcement has gone down very badly, even in Europe. You can write off the EU as playing any constructive, proactive role whatsoever in this process. As you quite rightly said, as was quite rightly said, I think, by my colleague on this program, the surrounding Arabs, that the immediate surrounding Arab states will leave aside Lebanon and war-torn Syria, silently, perhaps, supporting the American view. So what are the Palestinians going to do? Let's be realistic about this.
Richard Becker, it seems to me that when you have a negotiation that's supposed to take place, and correct me if I'm wrong, you have Israel on one side, you have the U.S. as a mediator, and then you have the Palestinian side. If the Palestinian side is not going to come to the negotiating table, then there are no negotiations. Then there's nothing that can bind this. You don't have a Palestinian side at this point, and the U.S. side is standing on shaky ground.
Well, if you approach the negotiations by first conceding to one side one of the most important aspects of the negotiations, that is the declaration by the United States that Jerusalem is the eternal capital of Israel. The U.S. recognizes that. Trump and Pence and their supporters all recognize that. Then, and you, there have been no serious negotiations now for many years. There's been some behind the scenes kind of things going on, but nothing really serious, because the Israeli position is to say that Israel wants peace but cannot find a partner for peace. But at the same time, it pursues, as I mentioned, the policy in every, on every front of really offering nothing except more suffering to the Palestinians in an attempt to drive them out. So the reason the Palestinians are declining, the Abbas government is declining at this point to go to the negotiations, is there's nothing on offer to them, nothing that could possibly be acceptable to the Palestinian population. So why go to negotiations if already the issue of Jerusalem is being declared off the table?
Well, we got 30 seconds to give you each. Jeffrey Alderman, it doesn't sound like there's going to be a peace process. What are we going to see? Where is this going to be going?
I repeat what I've said before on this program. The most we can hope for is conflict management, certainly not in the foreseeable future, conflict resolution. That's off the table.
And Richard Becker, same question.
Well, I mean, it's not on the immediate agenda by any means, but at some point, the question, and already has been raised, of course, of one state with equal rights for all people, you know, that's not an outrageous concept, although it's treated as the as anathema and unthinkable in both the U.S. and Israeli ruling circles. But as long as the possibility, there any real possibility of a Palestinian state, even a very weak Palestinian state, it appears to be impossible, then where else does this end up going? It's either that or a new form of expulsion, as happened to the Palestinians in 47 and 48.
Thank you very much for that. From the Answer Coalition, Richard Becker speaking to us from San Francisco, and Jeffrey Alderman, thank you, from London, historian and political commentator.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Debate. From Yikovetawe and the entire team of the Capital Tehran, it's goodbye.